Good afternoon. The Labor, Industry, Veterans, and Military Affairs Finance and Policy Committee will come to order. I would like to announce this meeting will take place in accordance with House Rule 10.01. This meeting may be viewed on the House Public Information TV, which is available on the House website. As is the custom with this committee, please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance. Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. Oh, thank you. Sorry about that. Just got some more bill jackets delivered. Anyway, before we start today's committee hearing, we have a part-time committee legislative assistant today, Mr. Smith. Please take the roll.
Chair Eklund.
Present.
Vice Chair Zhang.
Present.
Representative Detmer. Representative McDonald.
McDonald here.
Representative Berg.
Present.
Representative Bliss.
Present.
Representative Edelson.
Present.
Representative Frederick.
Present.
Representative Greenman.
Present.
Representative Nelson.
Present.
Representative Poston.
Present.
Representative Raleigh.
Raleigh present.
Representative Sundin. We have a quorum, Mr. Chair.
Present. Thank you, Mr. Smith. Quorum is present. Next on the agenda is approval of minutes for the March 8th, 2022 meeting. Representative Nelson, did you get a chance to take a look at the minutes?
Yeah, I did get a brief look at them, and they look good. I'll move approval of the minutes from the previous meeting.
Representative Nelson moves the minutes from March 8th, 2022. Any questions, deletions, or additions? Hearing none, seeing none, all those in favor of the minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion carries. Members, we have one bill and two presentations on the agenda today. The bill is from Representative Frederick, House File 3379. Representative Frederick, please move your bill and introduce it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that my bill get referred to the General Register.
Please explain the bill, Representative Frederick.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chair. So this bill was already heard in committee. What it does is it allows our National Guard to offer enlistment incentives to service personnel who are serving more than 12 years. Current Minnesota statute prevents the National Guard from offering enlistment incentives for someone who has served 12 years or more because of the previous assumption that if they were at that point, they would want to continue to serve until they could hit that 20 years for a pension. Well, back in 2016, Congress decided to change the retirement system, and that pension is no longer something that exists for new service personnel. So, Minnesota National Guard just wants to be able to keep offering those enlistment incentives because 12 years of experience is something that has a lot of value, and they want to do everything they can to keep service personnel active in the Minnesota National Guard. And so that is what this bill does.
Thank you, Representative Frederick. And I do believe that Mr. Curry would be able to answer any technical questions if there are anything. Members, any questions on Representative Frederick's bill? Looks like a good one to me. We get our guard members at 12 years. We want to make sure we stay that, keep them there till they can retire because of the, we all know what happens when people's knowledge go out the door and we leave people hanging. So I like your bill, Representative Frederick. Any final comments?
It's good bill, Mr. Chair, and I just hope that I can get everyone's stamp of approval.
Representative Frederick renews his motion that House File 3379 be referred to the General Register. Mr. Smith, please take the roll.
Chair Eklund.
Yes.
Eklund votes aye. Vice Chair Zhang.
Yes.
Zhang votes aye. Representative Detmer. Excused. Representative McDonald.
McDonald, aye.
McDonald, aye. Representative Berg.
Aye.
Representative Bliss.
Aye.
Bliss votes aye. Representative Edelson.
Aye.
Edelson votes aye. Representative Frederick.
Aye.
Frederick votes aye. Representative Greenman.
Aye.
Greenman votes aye. Representative Nelson.
Aye.
Nelson votes aye. Representative Poston?
Aye.
Poston votes aye. Representative Raleigh?
Raleigh, aye.
Raleigh votes aye. Representative Sundin?
Aye.
That's 12 ayes, 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
12 ayes, 0 nays. House File 3379 is on its way to the House floor on the General Register. Before we get on the presentations, Representative McDonald, did you have a question or a comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, I just wanted to bring up, it was notified that in Representative Fredrickson's introduction of the bill, he didn't give the House number. So I just wanted to bring that up, that it was House File 3379, which you just did when it passed. So right. Just for the record.
Thank you, Representative McDonald. I appreciated that. And that's why I made sure I said it, because he did neglect to mention his bill number. And I had that happen last week myself. I had a bonding bill up and I couldn't remember the bill number for the life of me. So it's just one of those things that happens.
It happens to the best of us.
Thank you, Representative McDonald. Okay, next up we have a presentation on the governor's 2022 supplemental budget for the Department of Veterans Affairs. Presenting for the department will be MDVA Commissioner Larry Herkey. Commissioner Herkey, welcome back to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Larry Herkey, Commissioner, Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. And I want to say thank you to you, Mr. Chairman, and also to the committee members for allowing me to present the Governor's Veterans Administration supplemental budget request for this year. And can you see my screen there, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, we can, Commissioner.
All right, thank you. Just a reminder about the agency profile for those we haven't presented it for a while, but we're serving those veterans, of course, their dependents and their survivors, and we do that through the federal and state care and benefits that they've earned. So we're sort of that organization that brings everything together for veterans in Minnesota. Currently, there are 304,000 veterans in Minnesota, and we also we're losing between 6,000 and 8,000 a year, if you're keeping track here overall. We do run this 5 state veterans homes, and currently we have 3 veteran cemeteries. Just good news on the new homes. They're all under construction, currently at 20% completion across the board. And also the new cemetery in Redwood County is also under construction. And I believe it's right around 25% completion at this time. My supplemental request for today is probably the biggest, at least since I've been here, maybe the biggest ever. I'm not quite sure. 8 different items, 3 of them related to the homeless veteran issue. The rest of them also important, but in different areas. And I'll take each one of them individually here going forward. The first item is the Veterans Bonus Program. This is, we're suggesting that we support a bonus for veterans that served in the post 9/11 timeframe. There are projected at 48,000 veterans that have served during this timeframe. Historically, the Minnesota legislature has recognized the veteran service during previous wars, including World War I, World War II, the Korean War, the Vietnam War, and most recently in the 1990s during the Persian Gulf War. In each one of the previous conflicts, the recognition has come in the form of a monetary bonus. And looking at recognizing those individuals had period of service from September 11th, 01 through August 30th, 2021. The intent here is to pay a bonus of $600 to a veteran that just served during that time, but did not receive an award of an expeditionary or campaign medal. Those that actually served in theater during that time period and received an expeditionary or campaign medal would be provided with a payment of $1,200 for their service. And we would also suggest that a $2,000 bonus be paid to the beneficiaries of any individual who died either in country or as a result of serving overseas. These would be KIAs, those that died due to accidents and also of health issues while deployed in support of their nation. Again, that would be paid to the beneficiaries of the actual veteran themselves. We have 97 veterans that would be in that category that we know of. We believe that about 52% of the people actually served in theater and were deployed in combat operations, so it's about 25,000. And then the balance of the folks would be people that just served since 9/11, and that's just a little over 26,000 individuals. We think, this has a couple benefits for us besides providing a thank you to the veteran themselves. These veterans are the ones that we probably need to gain a little bit a closer relationship with in order to be able to serve them well. By doing this, we would actually gather information on these veterans that would help us to actually serve them going forward. We would use no additional administrative costs. We'd use existing, we're going to modify our existing education funding method of getting money out. So we would have all the pieces and parts there available within a very short time to be able to do this. It's our intent to do distribution of these funds, if approved, between July 1st, 2022 and June 30th of 2024. And we would accept applications up to that June 30th timeframe and would pay those as soon as we can afterwards. And that is the bonus program. Mr. Chair, would you like to take questions individually, or should I just go through all eight items and then ask for questions at the end?
I think, Commissioner, I think we'll just wait for questions at the end.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. The next three items are related to veterans homelessness. Again, I want to thank you for the money for the state vouchers program. We're going to be sending our first vouchers actually out this probably in the next 2 weeks. We have contractors in bid, and we've got a third-party contractor. MACV will actually be doing that work for us going forward. And I'm very proud that we're going to be able to do that. Now the next challenge for me is to actually find a place to put them. Those veterans, and especially those veterans with high barriers. We've been working on a pilot program through landlord incentives for those veterans that have barriers in the past. We give each veteran a score that is on the veteran registry. Those that are over a score of 100 are considered high barrier individuals. We've provided through our pilot that we did, we provided $1,000, a one-time payment. That seemed to move some individuals some landlords to action. And they were able, because of that, to sort of forego some of the things that they would normally ask for as part of a application. And they would support having a veteran and taking a chance on them going forward. We'd like to be able to expand that a little bit for the veterans that have a score of over 125. Go a little bit higher with that, looking at potentially a monthly payment for up to the first year of the time that the veteran is with the landlord. The second area has been vacancy relief. That's to fill rental units in a timely manner. We've had a situation where we've lost units that have been rented to veterans previously. This would allow us to pay for that time period to make the actual landlord whole during the time period that we're waiting for an inspection or something else from the VA to happen in order for us to be able to put the next veteran in there. So that's been successful. We've used it with good success in the past. We'd just like to move that forward and continue that with the more rental units going forward. The last of the three is a risk mitigation fund. What this fund does is it will cover up to $2,000 beyond the security deposit for any damage that's done to the unit itself. And again, we've had limited use of this one, actually. The first two, quite a bit of use, but the third one, less use. But we think it also is important to have those landlords to be able to take a chance on veterans that they may not have in the past. And again, to help us with some of these veterans with the higher barrier scores. We'll actually be adding additional staff here, and we want to do that through a third-party contract. The equivalent of 5 FTEs to provide outreach to get to more landlords. I spend quite a bit of my time actually trying to get interest in landlords to come and help us and assist. These folks would be out there and helping us to find those, to be able to place the individual into the new home, and then make sure that the relationship is kept between landlords and the tenants going forward. So I think that this will be very helpful as it relates to our activities going forward. You can see the dollar amounts there. It's $1.1 million primarily for FY23. And then in the next buy-in, it would be $1.95 million as it relates to going forward. Again, I think this is going to be important over the next year and a half to 2 years as we're trying to get towards functional zero for the state of Minnesota. I had a question previously on this one on the tenancy supports. It is available to all veterans and former service members, regardless of the type of discharge. So we are taking care of anyone that served, even if it's just for a day, as long as you have some kind of documentation that documents that you've served. We're going to take care of these individuals no matter what form their discharge is in, and also if they don't meet the federal level of recognition to be a veteran, we can still take care of them. With these landlord funds, and also with the voucher that you approved during the last legislative session. Continuing in the veteran homelessness area, the low barrier affordable permanent supportive housing, we do feel, committee members, that there are certain veterans it's going to be very difficult to find a landlord to take a chance on them. In this intent, we would like to establish permanent housing options for those veterans. Be looking up, looking at either conversion or potentially new construction, but most likely conversion of facilities in order to be able to house up to 100 veterans. And this would be focused on the 7 county metro area. Right now, we've got 84 of the 87 counties that have achieved functional zero. The 3 counties left are St. Louis, Ramsey, and Hennepin. St. Louis County, it looks like we're going to get a declaration there soon. So our 2 counties left are Hennepin and Ramsey, and that's where we need the most help and assistance. We'd be working this housing probably through MACV as our agent for this. They've had quite a bit of work and have done a lot in this area, trying different potential options to include accessory dwelling units, multifamily residential units, and also we would be open to single room occupancy, similar to what we see at the UGM here in St. Paul. Next item is also related to veterans homelessness, and this is increasing engagement and outreach, and specifically looking at temporary housing. During the last few months, especially since we've had the surge with COVID, we've had funding for hotel stays for our veterans, which is something we didn't have previously. We've had 468 veterans that have actually used this hotel stay that's been provided by the federal VA. This program is going away, we believe, probably this summer, mid-summer timeframe. Of the 468, we've had 350 of those individuals, or approximately 75%, have had placements. And what we found, committee members, is that the placements out of the hotel program have actually been quicker than any other temporary housing that we've had. We believe that a couple different reasons. One, the availability of the person, we know where they're at, rather than being unsheltered or in some other area where they might gravitate away from. They tend to stay in the hotel units because they like them, and we're able to move them along a lot faster. Many of those 350 individuals were moved in less than 90 days, And that would be the intent to extend this program to allow, again, for temporary housing to go on beyond the middle of the summer. We did have some counties helping us out. It's my understanding now the only county left that's helping with this program with their own funding is Hennepin County. So we would utilize Hennepin County's funding first, of course, there. But we have used this throughout all of Minnesota. In fact, the distribution I looked at, many different counties throughout Minnesota where we currently have veterans that are in this hotel program. We would also, in this case, we would have four additional FTEs that would do outreach. The intent would be to make sure that we're contacting all the veterans and, again, taking care of those veterans that are in the hotel rooms in order to move them along quickly. And you can see the dollar amount there is 1.7 in 2023 and 3.428 in 24 through 25. Again, this program, I think, could be after this next year and the next biennium, I think this program could probably be reduced because I think we will have the surge of people that we're going to try to push in the next year and a half are going to be, will be on the backside of it. And I just think this help and assistance so will be very helpful. It's proven that it's been successful so far. The next request is for Fisher House construction at the Fargo VA in North Dakota. And you're going to say, Commissioner Herkey, why are you asking for money for the Fargo VA in northern Minnesota? Well, we actually have families and veterans that go to the Fargo VA. As it says here in the notes, there's 18 counties in northwest Minnesota that are actually served by the Fargo VA. It's about 26,000 Minnesota veterans that receive their care at this location. A Fisher House is like much like a Ronald McDonald House, but it's for veterans specifically. The way the program works is that the money is actually collected either through local government or private donations for the construction of it. And then the VA actually runs the operations going forward. So it's sort of a sweet deal for those that are using these facilities. It's my understanding this Fisher House is projected to be able to serve about 23,000 individuals in a one-year time frame. Minnesota, I did a little bit of math. Right now, they have collected $6.3 million towards this house. The project is going to be a little bit over $8 million. Part of the $6.3 million came from the North Dakota legislature. They provided $1 million towards this project. I did some back of the napkin math. I think Minnesota's portion of this would be about $500,000. And I would ask just for support for a one-time contribution to the Fisher House there in Fargo. I asked if they had a location selected. They said they didn't, but they will find one. And they're always within walking distance of the VA medical centers themselves. So I think this is a worthy thing for those veterans. And again, it's focused on veterans' families that are there supporting their veterans. It's my understanding, I've heard of veterans that actually have used it too for outpatient care. We're requesting, the next item is a request to the County Veteran Service Officer Grants, looking at an annual increase of $450,000. The last adjustment to this, I think, was done in 2013. Specifically, we're looking for $50,000 additional to go to MAC, MACBSO, which is the organization of all the CBSOs in Minnesota. Right now, they have a part-time executive director, and they would like to go from a part-time one to a full-time one. So that'd be an increase from $50,000 to $100,000 for MACBSO. And the other $400,000 would go to be available on a competitive basis. All counties would be available for submitting different opportunities, and these would be for things that are newer or emerging. Just some ideas, you know, things that would support outreach, reintegration of combat veterans into society. Homelessness would be an area that would be acceptable. Enhancing their operations of their own offices within the county itself, and then providing, helping, and collaborating with other agencies and educational institutions for veteran type issues. Transportation is another one that we often get help or requests for assistance from, so potentially part of this would go to that also. So again, 450,000 additional per year starting in 2023, and it'll be 900,000 for the next biennium. The next one is an increase to the Veteran Service Organization. Since I've been commissioner, the Veteran Service Organizations come to me and ask me if they could get an increase. Their last increase was in 2009. Be asking for 147,000 additional per year. This would make sure that each one of the Veteran Service Organizations would actually get an increase of about 15% from the amount that they're currently receiving, which at least helps make up for some of the inflation and so forth going forward. Right now, we've been at 353,000 per year previous to this, and we would like to ensure that the calculations, we've done it based on a methodology that has a set dollar amount for each member of their organization and a dollar amount based on the percentage of VA claims that they actually process. So those two things are taken in consideration as it relates to the dollar amounts that they would receive. And this would also take out Vietnam Veterans Organization, which no longer exists on the state level. They have local chapters, but no longer have a state presence currently available. And my last item, Mr. Chairman, is Veteran State Cemetery. This is a good news story. Redwood Falls Cemetery, or Redwood County Cemetery, is located just outside of Redwood Falls on U.S. Highway 71. It looks like, based on our contractor and it's the contractor's construction schedule, that we will be opening this with a soft opening in the Veterans Day of November of this year, and we'll do our first interments in the fall, and we'll have a formal dedication that will actually happen in the spring of 2023. We would like to start manning this cemetery coming up here starting in July, so we can get the staff on and start working on different elements of the cemetery that we can work with as we go forward. It'll be a total of 8 positions, 6.75 FTEs. This is a standard setup for our cemeteries throughout the rest of the state. We would have $205,000 go towards operational costs, which are utilities, fertilizers, maintenance, fuel, those kind of things, and $625,000 of this request would go towards the actual personnel or staffing costs. Again, we'd like to get this set up so we're ready to go for that first interment in November, and looking forward to that dedication ceremony in the spring of 2023. In the 24-25 biennium, 1.66 would be the total for operations for the cemetery at Redwood County. So I gave you this last slide, sort of provides a summary of all the requests, the largest, of course, being the bonus. We strongly believe that this is the time to do it. We've had the 9, as you know, Mr. Chairman, we've had the 9/11 welcome home ceremony. We've got the president now has ceased combat operations. We just think this is the appropriate time to start this recognition. We think it will help our veterans that have served. Some of them could use the additional money. I know quite a few that, you know, this could be very helpful. I think, but it is recognition, and again, it will help us as an agency to try to track and help these veterans going forward. The next three items really is to get to the functional zero as it relates to veteran homelessness. I have all the funding now to be able to help, through your help, to be able to help the veterans as far as their vouchers and so forth. Now, all I need is some help actually getting places to put those veterans. these three in tandem have proven, all three of them have proven that they will work. And I think this combination is a perfect combination to be able to get to the next state to say we're at functional zero in the U.S. The medical center is, I think, just the right thing to do with the Fisher House. It's taking care of our families. And a lot of families do use, are supportive of their veterans that are there for medical help and assistance. The changes in the Veteran Service Officer grants and the Veteran Service Organizational grants, I think, are probably long overdue, and I definitely support those going forward. And lastly, we would like to get that cemetery open as we go forward, so we're asking for those funds to be able to do that. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I've concluded my brief, and I'll stand for any questions that the committee might have.
Thank you, Commissioner Herkey. And before we get into the questions too much, I want to let the committee know that when Commissioner Herkey and I first had discussions, started having discussions on Governor's Supplemental Bus, my first question was, why in the world would we give money to North Dakota? And after he explained it to me, members, I get it. I've taken friends over to that VA center for treatment, and I could see where it would be very helpful to have something like that for family members and such. So, member questions on the commissioner's presentation. If we could take the slideshow down, Commissioner, that I could see everybody's hands right now. I only have about four. There we go. Representative Berg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a quick question. I'm wondering if any of your plans in terms of the veterans housing piece have a mechanism that leads to the opportunity for home ownership for them.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair and Representative Berg, I appreciate that. We actually got asked that question when I presented over on the Senate side, and I think that's something I'm going to look into. The one drawback it will have is if we do home transfer, I'm still going to, even when we get to functional zero, I'm still going to need a place to put our veterans, and that would take one housing opportunity away from another veteran potentially. A lot of our veterans now actually graduate, usually we'll go, you know, and buy a house or something afterwards. So to answer your question, we have not developed a mechanism. I think it's something I can take a look at, and it may make sense with some properties, but maybe not with others. So, but it is something we definitely are going to look into.
Representative Berg.
Thank you. I appreciate your answer.
Any other member questions? Well, I have a couple, Commissioner, that I want to run by you here, and we've had this conversation on these two issues. Is the agency certain that we have provided enough funding to tackle what are probably my two biggest concerns since I took over as chair of this committee, as veterans homelessness and veteran suicide? Do we have adequate resources available to move those forward? And I'm not thinking just this fiscal year, but I'm thinking keeping the program going on, so we'd be talking about the tails as well.
Mr. Chairman, I believe with the addition of these three items I'm requesting, it will take care of my last issue, and that's actually finding the locations to put these individuals. I could see additional funding potentially coming in the low barrier permanent supportive housing. I am working on different options as it relates to this, and there may be in order to be successful and provide an insurance policy going forward, I may need a little additional help in that area, but I think the money that I've requested here would be enough to get us to functional zero. The housing market is so challenging, or has been so challenging in the past, that would be the area in veterans homelessness where I may ask for additional help in the future. In the area of veterans suicide prevention, I think we're seeing some things emerge there, and I know you asked me this question earlier, so I was ready to answer it. There potentially will be an option for us to do what's called, it's right now Regions Hospital is doing HERO, I think they call it HERO Care, where they have a social worker that's actually embedded in the hospital that helps and assists veterans to not only seek benefits, but also to help and assist them to even tie them back to the VA system for payment. And it's been very successful for regions. I've had other hospitals that we've talked to, our hospital systems that are interested in that. And I think that might be a position that I maybe look at in the future and maybe help us and assist those veterans. So the first question when you come to check in is, are you a veteran? And if you are, this, you know, they, what they do there is this person actually engages with them almost immediately or as quick as possible. It's been very successful. I would have never thought that would be something that I should consider, but it seems to be working quite well at Regents Hospital, and that would be one area that I may need some help with going forward. The other thing, we're going to start our PSA campaign as it relates to the that'll happen this summer. And we may need a little help and assistance with that. I'm going to ensure that we expend all the funding that we have for 2023, but I may be requesting some additional help in that area. ICS states right now, the federal side doesn't have some money for PSAs, but it's very limited. I see that somewhere as a statewide that I can help with billboards, with paid advertisement, and we're definitely going to try to get as much paid, unpaid or free advertisement as I can, but that might be an area too as we further develop programs. And we do plan on putting a PSA together specifically for Minnesota using Minnesotans in the actual production, and I think that would be another area. The last area that I thought of, Mr. Chairman, was in the area of Wisconsin has a very good program as it relates to helping the veteran to have a safe place to put their firearms. Many times the doctor will indicate that he's requesting that the firearms are not, due to their mental health situation, are not in the house. We would provide a place that the veteran can decide on their own at a gun shop or some other location to be able to put the firearms, probably more than likely for like 90 days or maybe 120 days. And this is all voluntary, so it's just based on following the doctor's orders. But we would help and assist with that by providing the locations and just assisting with that. And I think that could help with the lethal means reduction in some areas that, or even a veteran, even if they don't have a doctor's order, if they feel it's in their best interest to move those firearms out of the house and they don't have someone they can give them to that they can trust, this would be a third location that they could put them voluntarily if that would be something they'd like to do. Those are three areas I can think of in the veterans suicide prevention. I'm sure by the time I present the next budget request, there may be other ones, but those are the ones that are come top of mind right now, Mr. Chairman.
And thank you, Commissioner. And keep me in the loop as we go forward with this, because if there's any way to help this year on those items, I'd like to be able to help the agency out. Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, a question for Mr. Lurkey. You're familiar with the program for the veterans that are 100% disabled for the property tax reduction or the elimination of property tax with that program?
Commissioner Herkey.
Correct.
I'm sorry, Representative McDonald. You were breaking up a bit, so I thought you were done. Finish the question.
No, go ahead. If I could have the commissioner answer, I'll finish afterwards.
Commissioner Herkey.
Yes, Representative McDonald. I am aware of it. It's my understanding that right now it's for any veteran that's 70% or higher disabled as it relates to their service to their country, and it's up to, I know there's a maximum amount that they can that they are eligible for, but I am aware of the program.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, Commissioner Herkey, I should have addressed that question differently. I should have said, I'm sure you're aware of the program. And the reason I asked is I did have a veteran come into my photo studio about a month and a half ago, and he wanted me to consider legislation that would have the homes keep up with inflation? Because I guess there's a cap of a $300,000 house for those who are disabled at 70%, their property tax, there'll be no property tax. But as the value of homes go up, of course, then those that are disabled at 70% or more will have to pay that portion of the property tax. So I wanted to get your thoughts on would legislation be, do you think legislation is needed that we should change the law, allow for inflation for those homes that are valued at the cap at $300,000?
Before I go to Commissioner Herkey on that, Representative Donald, I do know there are several tax bills that are addressing those things that are in Chair Marquardt's committee. We generally don't get the tax bills that come through here. They just get directly sent to that committee. So we would have to have that discussion with Chair Marquardt on what he's hearing and what kind of bills are moving forward. Commissioner Herkey, if you have any other comments on that, I would appreciate it.
Mr. Chair and Representative McDonald, I'm aware of it. I think that I can add that the Commander's Task Force, the veteran service organizations are supportive of the change. And I know there's a couple different options available right now, I believe. And I'm not sure what the best one is, but they are supportive of the change. And they did talk during their discussions with me that the $300,000 was an issue and they did want that to be increased. So that would be my answer for your question as it relates to what the CTF said.
Sorry, Commissioner. Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner Herkey. Good. I'm glad that you're attuned to that and perhaps in favor of an increase in that. I'm on the tax committee, actually, so I will ask Representative Marquardt. I haven't heard of anything yet, but I guess I've just been notified that Representative Bliss has a bill that would do that, increase the market value for disabled veterans. So I thank you, little John. It's House File 3959, Mr. Chair, so just in case you were asked as well. So I'm glad I asked the question. House File 3959, Representative Bliss, and I will pass it on to my constituent, my veteran friend.
Thank you, Representative McDonald. Any other questions?
Not at this moment.
Okay.
Thank you.
Right, Representative Bliss, I saw your hand up, but I think you were probably just letting us know what the bill number was. Is that correct? Because it's now down. So, thank you, Representative Bliss. Any other member questions for the commissioner? I have two more quick ones, Commissioner. I'm seeing a couple bills bonding for the veterans' homes. Is there going to be some bonding that needs to be done to make sure that these are finished? The Senate chair sent some green jackets over to me, so that's why I'm asking, Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate the opportunity to remind everyone. Yes, there's a $10.3 million shortfall as it relates to the three veterans' homes currently under construction. In order to keep construction going forward, we have enough to actually construct the buildings. What I don't have enough for is for the fixtures and the furniture and equipment required to actually occupy those homes. And also I'm quite short on owner's contingency in case something comes up. So we have a request in for $10.3 million. This is spread across the three homes, and the reason for this was due to when we put out the subcontractor bids as it related to things like roofing and drywall and some of those different areas, that we had a very difficult time, especially in Montevideo, Minnesota, was the most difficult of all, to try to get competitive bids. We bid some of the items up to three times, did our best to keep costs down as it related to having it bid competitively, but in all cases, we weren't able to get quite as low as what the architects and those that were estimating my projects for me. So I do need an additional $10.3 million in order to finish the three homes. I also, Mr. Chair, have a request in for $59 million for the total rehab of Hastings. We basically would eliminate the Hastings campus. I think six of the nine buildings would be taken down. There's three of them that are beyond their useful life right now and are really in need of replacement. And the balance of the buildings, some of them are over 118 years old. So it is definitely time in Hastings to give some love and attention to those veterans that we have over there in that location. The last item that I under my capital bonding request is a request for asset preservation. I think that's right around $10 million, and a lot of that would be focused towards buildings other than the would a lot of that be focused towards the domiciliary, which is the annex of that is in Minneapolis in building 16, and that building is in need of a major renovation at this time.
Hey, thank you, Commissioner. I just want to clear that up before I figure out what I'm going to do with these green jackets. So we'll get those passed out. Then my last question, Commissioner, I believe the CBSOs are requesting $1 million. Is $450,000 a compromise, or is that a number that was that somehow was agreed to as far as for the governor's supplemental reset, request? Oh, you're muted, Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, that was the amount that we discussed with the CBSOs as it related to, I guess, MACBSO representing them. We felt that this would provide professionalism at the state level for their central organization, which we've supported all along. We also felt that it would provide an additional $400,000 on a competitive basis for them. And I think a lot of there's a lot of counties out there that are sort of neutral on you know, the funding, but there's a lot that really appreciate it and they wish they could have more. This is an opportunity for those counties that really want to do that to be able to go and compete competitively for the additional $400,000 that we available each year. So we saw this, I guess, as the best compromise as it related to funding going forward.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner, and thank you for the MDBA supplemental budget presentation today, and we'll be in touch. I don't see any other member questions, so I appreciate your time, Commissioner. All right, next on the agenda is the presentation for the governor's supplemental budget for the Department of Military Affairs and Minnesota National Guard. Presenting will be Executive Director Don Kerr. Welcome back to the committee, Mr. Kerr. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your presentation.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Don Kerr. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Department of Military Affairs, and I'm here today to present our supplemental budget requests for the agency moving forward. Our agenda as follows. We've really just got a couple of things to talk to you about, only one of which is an official proposal. But we did want to make you aware of another initiative that we're looking into that we may bring up later if everything comes together. And I'll talk about that at the end. Our first one is our official proposal. So this is a proposal for our holistic health and fitness program. And this sounds like a very interesting thing. And as I've looked into it, I will tell you that I started as a skeptic and have kind of become a believer in this. Holistic health and fitness is actually a United States Army program that's being implemented across the United States Army. And I'll talk about that a little bit, but our proposal is to basically try to get a jumpstart on this and bring 5 employees on to manage and execute this program initially, starting in 2023, with a little bit of upfront cost for some equipment that we have to buy, and then carrying that out into the tails at $742,000 a year. So again, we'd initiate with 3 military personnel and 2 civilian employees. And the reason that we're selecting the civilians there is because we're looking for certified physical therapists and nutritionists, something that we generally don't have necessarily in the Army and wouldn't necessarily be an Army required background to be able to do that. So here's a little bit of our background. And like I say, this is something that I kind of started off as a skeptic, but the more I look into it, the more I think the Army is really committing to this. They've adopted holistic health and fitness in the Army as their core philosophy. In fact, that is the title of the Army's new physical training manual, Holistic Health and Fitness. And it is written around this program as it's being applied in the active component. Unfortunately, the feds do not currently have a resourcing plan to cover the reserve components at least through 2026. And so we really feel that this is an opportunity for us to get ahead of this and give our soldiers the opportunity to be embedded in this new program that we think is really going to improve readiness. So what is holistic health and fitness? And there are some bullets on the slide, but a holistic health and fitness program enhances readiness by educating and informing our roughly 11,000 Army National Guard service members across five domains: mental, sleep, nutritional, physical, and spiritual. It utilizes a strategy to prevent injuries and recover from injuries, and prevent fitness failures and recover from fitness failures, preparing service members both physically, mentally, and spiritually for mission rigors, and educating the force to influence positive, self-sustaining cultural change. That sounds a lot like Army speak, but it's really kind of an important thing. And I want to talk for a minute about how there's kind of a philosophical difference happening in the Army right now. They're looking very hard at what the Army has always done and saying, what are we doing wrong here? We're hurting an awful lot of soldiers through what we're trying to make them physically fit, and we wind up hurting them. And often we hurt them so badly that they cannot continue to serve. And then whatever investment we've already made in them goes out the door because we throw them out of the Army because they can't stay in. And really, holistic health and fitness is about changing the mindset of the Army. And there are a lot of these things that come along about changing the mindset of the Army. But what I think is very interesting about this one, if you look at my bottom bullet point on the slide, they're actually staffing 37 people per brigade in 110 active brigades. That's a really substantial investment that the Army plans to make in the next 10 years. And I'm really taken aback by the fact that this is actually happening. So I'm going to move on a little bit. So now I've got a little bit about each of those five different areas. And I wanted to show it this way because this is an Army slide. And of course, the aspect of holistic health and fitness that is most fully developed by the Army is the thing they've been doing forever. Strength, speed, and endurance, aerobic strength, anaerobic strength, burst strength, all of the things that you would expect to talk about if we're talking about a fitness program. That's clearly articulated inside that field manual because they've got years and years of experience. But just as important are these other areas. Other performance areas are nutritional readiness, trying to really take an educational approach toward our soldiers to improve their nutritional fitness, their spiritual readiness, their mental readiness, and very interestingly, sleep readiness. Sleep readiness coverage is actually getting a lot of media attention, because the Army is getting very serious about trying to drive people to do more sleep. And I'll talk a little bit I'll talk right now about it. So my own experience, of course, I served a long time in an Army that many of you may also have served in. And I recently underwent a hip replacement surgery, and now I went through some physical therapy. And I went to my physical therapist, and the physical therapist started asking me if certain exercises were easy or hard. And I looked at her kind of crosswise and said, I really don't understand your question, because in the environment I came from, it didn't matter if it was easy or if it was hard. You were simply going to do it. If they said do 40 push-ups, you did 40 push-ups. Whether it was easy or hard, it didn't matter. So you did that. And often that mentality gets ingrained into our service members, where they could push themselves beyond their limits of exertion and actually break themselves. And I think this is a real effort by the Army to turn a little bit on that and start saying, maybe you should listen to your body, and maybe we need to be a little bit more comprehensive in how we approach this. So my next slide gives a little bit of insight as to how the Army structure, and this is a terrible slide, but it gives you an idea. So for every brigade, and a brigade is generally an organization that has between 2,000 and 5,000 soldiers in it, there's going to be this H2F branch, Holistic Health and Fitness branch. And they've got 37 or 38 people assigned in this branch to facilitate those 2,000 to 5,000 soldiers in the brigade in their strive to become more holistically healthy. And you'll see that there are things like an injury control director and a brigade H2F trainer. And what's the other one? The nutrition program coordinator. And so they have nutritionists, and they have physical therapists, and they have athletic trainers who are contracted positions. Again, pretty extensive investment on the part of the Army to do this times 110 across the United States Army, kind of a big deal. It's a little frustrating that they aren't making the same investment in the reserve component, but at the same time, I understand a little bit, because One of the things in the active component, all 5,000 soldiers in that brigade are going to be located in generally the same place. In fact, in a much smaller footprint than the soldiers of the Minnesota National Guard are in Minnesota. So we think we have to take a little bit of a different approach as we have to deal with the geographical separation. And obviously, we don't think it would be prudent to jump in and ask for the resources to put on 37 full-time people to try to support this. So what we tried to do is take a look at, within that program, what are the key nodes that need to come on board to give us a leg up when this thing does get rolled out, if it gets rolled out. And we decided that's probably a program director and a program analyst, a trainer, a physical therapist, and a registered dietitian to start with. So those are the positions that we've selected. We think there's a reasonably good chance that at some point in the future, we would be able to transition these folks out of state service and into federal service, but we aren't sure when that's going to happen or if it's going to happen. And we do feel that this is a good investment to start getting us in line. And so the way some of these things might work is that H2F program director will probably be in a one-to-many relationship with all of our units who can provide advice and counsel to those units and how they can adjust their programs to fit their personal needs. And these physical therapists and dietitians may be in a position to either do direct counseling of individual soldiers that are referred to them, or potentially to provide a geographic re-referral to some local asset that may be able to provide the same services to their service members. But having the full-time resource, our experience has been that in areas where we have done that, like in psychological health, it's really helped us to be able to get a better outcome for our service members by making those connections. So once again, the proposal, $765,000 in 2023, $742,000 in the out years to bring on these five personnel. We think they're probably going to be at Camp Ripley, though they may wind up at Arden Hills or some other location. We're continuing to look at what makes sense for the Minnesota National Guard. We're also looking at what lessons are learned in some of the pilot programs that the active component has started in the National Guard to try to determine what the real way forward might be. But we thought this was a good start. Mr. Chair, that's it for that request. The other one I wanted to make you aware of, another potential request, and what we're seeing is a real difficulty in recruiting new enlistments into the National Guard. All the services are running into this. And we've also looked very hard at how much more sense it makes to retain our skilled and trained service members. And as you know, our policy initiative is to give, that went through this morning or earlier today, is to give the Adjutant General the authority to increase the population that would be eligible for bonuses. But what we're really looking at is potentially increasing the bonuses that are available to help incentivize our trained service members to stay in the National Guard. We're still doing the staff work to determine exactly what we need. Right now, we have money in the enlistment incentives account, and we know we're going to carry some forward into next year and are able to fund the programs we have on the ground now. But we're looking hard, and we think there's a possibility that we may be coming back for an additional $2 to $2.5 million a year in the enlistment incentives appropriation. We don't think we'll ask for that this year, but it could be as early as next year. But again, we aren't solid on that yet. That's something we still really have in staffing. And I think, Mr. Chair, that with that, I will subject myself to any questions that you or the committee may have of me.
Thank you, Mr. Kerr. As soon as we get the shared screen down, I'll be able to see raised hands. There we go. Representative Raleigh.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate it. On slide 10, it was mentioning that they're going to be creating a new MOS. Is that MOS going to be created at the active duty side and then move to the National Guard side, or is this going to be an initiative at the National Guard side?
Mr. Kerr.
Mr. Chair, Representative Raleigh, good question. No, that's actually an Army MOS that's going to be instituted as part of the Army-wide program. And so we would then fall under that as the MOS became effective and rolled out. And presumably, we would receive some of those authorizations in either our tables of allowance and equipment, or tables of authorization and equipment, or our tables of distribution that authorize what we can have in our units. So presumably those would come into the force structure of those units from Big Army, and then we would just adopt those and train our service members accordingly.
Representative Raleigh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And is this Do you have any sense of where the trainers are going to be located, which base?
Mr. Kerr.
Mr. Chair and Representative Raleigh, so when we get into the military personnel, if you think about it, I think your experience will be relevant enough to understand this, but we have this thing called master fitness trainers now that we actually have down to the company and battery level. And I would expect that many of those trainers would fall into that same role, more as an additional duty within their units, with additional training to help those units. So they would be located wherever their unit was located geographically. Initially, though, we think that the full-time team that we'd be putting on to help manage this program would either be at Camp Ripley or potentially at Arden Hills.
Representative Raleigh.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And that's exactly what I was driving towards, Mr. Kerr, is the cross-training between MOSs. And can you walk me through why we need the, I think it's 5 FTEs for this. And why do we need 5 FTEs as opposed to cross-training current members of the National Guard?
Mr. Kerr.
Mr. Chair, Representative Raleigh. So our concept is that the 5 full-time members, 2 of them would actually be professionals. There would be a dietitian and a physical therapist that would be able to provide consultation. And those are skills that we don't think we could train our service members to do. And the other 3 positions are really in program management. There's the manager of the program and another person to manage the training plans within that, an analyst working for the overall program manager. And I've got to look at what that 5th one is on my other slide here, if I can get to the right mouse, because I got way too much stuff going on. Yeah, the program director, program developer, and the course manager would be the military members, and they would provide consultation to the chain of command of the various units, and they would support all the units in the Minnesota Army National Guard.
Representative Raleigh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Kerr, it is very interesting to hear the Army wanting more sleep in the infantry. They try to keep us awake as long as possible. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate it. Those are my questions.
Thank you, Representative Raleigh. Any other member questions? Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Kerr, just curious, with the new program with the spiritual fitness and the whole holistic, which I think most of us agree on, just wondering why then, since it's such an important element, that the federal government, unless I'm mistaken, is not helping fund the new program.
Mr. Kerr.
Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald, that's an excellent question that I wish it had an answer for, but it is a pattern of behavior that we often see the active component fall into, particularly when there is a resource demand. They tend to want to resource fully the active component and figure out what to do in the reserve component as a follow-on. I do genuinely believe that they will be driven to do that. I don't think they will fund it at the same level as being funded in the active component, nor do I think they should, based on the level of interaction we have with our service members. But it is somewhat disappointing to see that they haven't really addressed how to implement the program in the reserve component. And we think that they will eventually. We'd just like to be postured to be absorbed into that at a higher level of readiness when they finally come to that conclusion.
Representative McDonald.
Chair, thank you, Mr. Kerr. Then also curious, yes, of course, whoever knows what the federal government, you never know what they're doing over there. But the question is, why is it that you need some new staff to come in to do the training instead of training existing staff with this whole holistic training?
Mr. Kerr.
Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald. Yeah, so of course, to be able to train the existing staff, we have to have someone who's knowledgeable in the program. And so train the trainer is a wonderful concept, but at the top end of it, there has to be somebody who knows what they're doing. And we really feel like, particularly with some of those hard skills like the physical therapist and the dietitian, those are things that we need to have someone on staff that can provide that consultation. And like I say, we've had some really good results with this with our director of psychological health. It's a federally funded position that we've been able to put on. And even though they're mostly doing referral work, prior to their existence, no one was doing that referral work. And so we kind of see this will evolve in the same fashion, that by having someone who specializes in a particular area, it brings focus to that area. and makes resources available that would not otherwise be considered simply through a lack of understanding or knowledge.
Representative McDonald.
I understand that. Thank you, Mr. Kerr. I suppose that does make sense, although it's to bring in to train the trainers, but in the event it does cost more money for us, for the state, obviously. So it's kind of a double-edged sword, I guess you would say.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald, I think that's true with all investments that the state is asked to make. There's always a double-edged sword to it.
Right.
All right. McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Kerr.
All right. Any other member questions? I just have two, and myself, this may be more of a comment on one of them, and I'll start off with holistic health. I like it. I think it's obvious that we need a couple skilled people at the top to be able to do this, and most likely those skills are not in what we have in the National Guard. And just to comment on that, I was talking to one of my local contractors here the other day, and what he's telling me is his construction workers are more worried about workout rooms, bike paths, and libraries now when they are finding places to live when they have jobs, than they're worried about nightclubs and other activities that maybe the construction workers normally did. So I think that's maybe a trend in society that we're seeing, because if our contractors are looking at stuff when they're trying to find hotels, obviously people are making some lifestyle changes that are probably good for society overall. Then the other question I have or comment, when you talked about potential for enlistment bonuses that we might need it, Mr. Kerr, is this, do you feel that this is maybe a reflection of the overall workforce issues that we're having across the state and the nation as far as getting people to sign up for the National Guard?
Mr. Chair, I definitely think that it's related to that. We've got a number of challenges, and propensity to enlist is one of them. Another one is we've recently implemented new medical standards that have made it even tougher to join the military, and that's really challenging our recruiting force. And I guess I'll leave it at those. Those are the big ones, but there definitely is something different going on in the workforce that we haven't seen before.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Kerr. And let's keep in contact on that enlistment bonus thing, because I'm hopeful that we'll be able to do something to help the National Guard out. They've been, the past 2 years going through this pandemic, the National Guard, the state National Guard has done an outstanding job, whether it's disturbance control, helping out in the clinics, helping out with the testing, all that. So I appreciate, and I know the fellow members in this committee appreciate what the National Guard has done to help us through this pandemic for the last 2 years. Any other final member questions for Mr. Kerr before we go? Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. See, Mr. Kerr, I didn't hear if you said anything about the recruitment. And if I didn't, if you did, I apologize. But how is the recruitment going, and then the funding with the recruitment?
Mr. Kerr.
Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald. So our recruiters are performing admirably. Minnesota is... we're not leading the pack. I think we're second to Texas typically month to month. And when you consider that Texas has twice as many recruiters and five times the population to draw from, that's no short order. But we are seeing across the nation, military recruitment is struggling a little bit in trying to get folks to join the service. So it's currently funded appropriately. One of the challenges, and it's one of those things that often they will try to throw money at the problem when they see a problem to make it go away. And it's really hard to do that because the number of available applicants doesn't change no matter how much money you throw at it or how many recruiters you put on the street. So that's a challenge for us. We're also a little bit challenged in being able to get training seats. With the COVID-19, all of the military training has had a couple of weeks added, at least to one end and often to both. And that makes it harder for us to fit training windows, to fit soldiers into training windows that allow them to get back and go to college. There are myriad challenges with it. It's never been an easy business. It just keeps on getting harder. But that's okay. We'll persevere. We'll rise to the occasion and rise to the challenge. But it's definitely tougher out there recruiting than it used to be.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Kerr. Thank you, Chair Eklund.
All right, Mr. Kerr, thank you for the presentation, and let's keep in touch as we move forward on the needs of the Guard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
Okay. Members, our next meeting is Tuesday, March 15th, 2022. Representative McDonald, you still have your hand up for a question or a comment?
Nope, I took it down.
All right, he took it down. The joys of Zoom. Soon we'll be over this. And I'm going to put it, before we go, members, I'm going to put in one shameless plug. Representative McDonald, your broadband is obviously as bad as it is at my house. That's why I'm down here in my office doing this. So take a look at House File 14 and maybe you can sign on to it. Anyway, members, we'll see you next week at committee. We are adjourned.